would you like to sell irresistible offers with AI? Perry Belter will tell us how. And what's so special about Perry is he is a digital marketing pioneer, copywriting legend, and AI strategist, widely known as the Billion Dollar Man, for generating billions in sales for his own ventures and clients. And he co-founded Digital Marketer and the Traffic and Conversion Summit that I have heard of, two of the most influential brands in online marketing. So, Perry, how can I turn myself into a photocopy of you, into a Perry Belter with AI, so that I can sell millions and more than I'm currently doing?
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
Well, number one, you're a very pretty girl. Nobody wants to be a carbon copy of me. I promise you that. Yeah, I've been selling online forever. And I think that, you know, I've written a lot of copy. I've sold about $1 billion worth of product online over the last, you know, I'm older, you know, so I've been at this for about 20 years. So sold about $1 billion worth of my own product online, and a bunch of other people sold a bunch based on my teaching and advice, I think. Hope so anyway. But about 7 years ago, I got into AI. So way before OpenAI and all that. And I just kind of saw it as a tool that helps to level the playing field for other people. So to date, I used to charge $40,000 a sales letter to write sales letters if I wrote them for somebody else. I didn't do that many. But to date, my AI bots will beat me. They'll beat my controls. When I write copy and then I write copy with AI Perry, AI Perry generally beats Perry Perry, because it's just more consistent. You know, there's a bunch of ways that you can go about it, right? If you're, I don't know how sophisticated your audience is with AI, if they're using ChatGPT, if they're using custom GPTs, if they're using Claude, or if they're using any of the other agents. but I use custom GPTs a great deal. And really, all you have to do is train a custom GPT to be a copywriter. And you can literally go into ChatGPT and say, write me a set of expertly crafted, highly detailed instructions for a custom GPT that is a master copywriter, similar to blank, blank, and blank. Fill in your favorite copywriters. And then it'll give you a set of instructions. I can show you how to do it if you want. But it'll give you a set of instructions on how to train a custom GPT, which a custom GPT, if you don't know what that is just a customized version of ChatGPT that you basically control. Anybody with a paid account can build them. Anybody can use them that has any account. But really, the deal is understanding, it still helps to understand human nature. So when the AI puts out an output of a sales letter or a webinar or a email series or whatever, it's still good to have some tribal knowledge to go in and look at it and see if it makes sense or not. Because the AI is not always, you know, and I guess my biggest claim to fame is writing to the caveman brain. So when I'm writing copy, no matter what it's for, I'm really only thinking about a handful of things. I'm trying to stimulate certain brain chemicals, serotonin, dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, and cortisol. And these brain chemicals can be stimulated with words. That's what psychological copywriting is about. And, you know, the first thing, dopamine, is released in your brain when you anticipate something good's about to happen. Serotonin, you get when you feel like your status is about to be upgraded. Oxytocin, you get when you feel like you're in a community, or you're loved, or you belong, or you're into your tribe. And then finally, cortisol is a feeling of loss, the anticipation of loss, and you use it toward the end of sales messages. If you learn how to manipulate those brain chemical productions, copy becomes pretty easy. But the thing is, I know how all that works at a molecular level. I mean, really, like, My ex-wife used to say, one of them, I got a collection. She said, "You're doing that brain thing on me, aren't you?" When we would get in a fight. But I'm really good at convincing people to do things based on knowing how these brain chemicals stimulate behavior. The AI is not as good as me most of the time. If I get used to me in my training, it can be, but it's 1,000 times better than 99% of other people.
Thank you.
And if you, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I apologize. You continue.
No. You're good. Feel free to, but it ask anything you want because I don't know exactly. You're driving the show. I don't know exactly where you want to go, but fundamentally, cavemen are only interested in a couple of things. And you got to remember, we're all still cavemen. We've only evolved about this much from being cavemen. But they need to be in a tribe. Everybody wants to be in a community. Everybody wants to be accepted. Everybody wants to be usually admired or feel important. So people want to be in the tribe. The number one motivation of people is to not be exiled, to not be isolated. If you really think about it, when you're in prison and you get in trouble, what do they you? They further isolate you, right? So people fear isolation above all things. So how do they ensure in their lives they're not going to be isolated? They increase their status. They want to get inside better rooms. They want to have better friends. They want to be invited to better parties, right? They want to be smarter. They want to develop skills. So when you go to write copy to people, all you really have to think about is, think about this like scales, like they use in the legal system. You see the scales. On one hand, is this going to raise my status? And on the other hand, is this going to lower my status? And if it's going to raise their status and there's not a great deal of risk of it lowering their status, people will usually move forward. But most copywriters don't address the lowering of status. They just think about the rising of status. So that was sort of a complicated answer. I'm usually not a complicated answer guy to your question, but like how do I write great offers or how do I make great offers? It's a skill that's to be learned and it's important to have it because life, whether you're a copywriter or not, life is a series of offers and acceptance. That's it. I mean, Lily, are you married?
No.
Okay. You ever almost got married?
Yes.
Okay. So that was an offer. Somebody made you an offer, right? They probably presented you with a premium, maybe like a ring, for instance, to sweeten the offer, right?
Yeah.
So there's really no difference. And then you decide based on that offer, you evaluate that offer and you say, is this offer going to raise my status or lower my status? Well, if I get married to this guy and he's a great guy, I'm assuming it's a guy, it could be a guy or a girl, doesn't matter to me. But if I get married, this guy's a great guy, and now we've got a dual income family and we can have a nicer house and a nicer car and a nicer everything, live in a nicer neighborhood. It's a great thing. It elevates my status. He's a good looking dude. He's fun at parties, whatever, right? But what if he's a drummer and has no money and maxes out my credit cards, So we're in every aspect of life, we're making offers. We're making and accepting or declining offers. And the people in life who learn how to craft the best offers, and they really are only those four big criteria, the people in life that understand how to craft the best offers tend to win at life, not just at writing sales letters or emails or anything else. They tend to win at life. They can get up, I can speak on stage and make an offer, be in a boardroom and make an offer, meet somebody at the bar and make an offer. Doesn't matter. But if you understand the structure of it, it's kind of like I told somebody one time, there's a structure to writing songs. People are like, well, I wish I was a songwriter. Well, you just don't sit down and write a song. There's a structure to a song. There's an opening verse, there's a chorus. There's usually an anthem in the middle, like a bridge, and then there's the final chorus. It's like a three-act play. That everything has a system, and offers are no different. They have systems.
Thank you.
That
So,
answer your question, kind of?
yes, and we are still kind of getting there. So, tell me why, for example, why do I feel so compelled to buy from different sales letters? Like, for example, when I'm looking at the Peng Joon sales letters,
Right.
okay,
I know
like
Ping real
so,
well.
I feel so compelled to buy. Okay. And there are other sales letters as well that I've bought, you know, like smaller ticket stuff, like $27, and it just feels like, oh my God, it's such a good deal. And why, for example, I consider myself a great copywriter, but still, I have never written like the sales letter that makes me want to like, you know, feel like, oh my God, I totally should pull out my credit card right now. Although I know it's great value, but there's definitely something little that I'm missing and I don't really know what it is. So, and I've definitely not never covered the lowering of status part, apart from like, okay, when you're not kind of, let's say, attending this course or whatever, you're never gonna, you know, get a promotion or whatever. But clearly, I'm not doing it right because if I'm personally not feeling that compulsion to like, you know, get my credit card right now and buy right now before the offer runs out. There's definitely something wrong that I'm doing. So I want you to tell me what would you say are is the formula that you always have to have that will compel someone to buy? And like, how would you even say it?
Well, there's a lot of pieces to that. I've been studying this for 40 years, right? So the master copywriters, and there's only probably, honest to God, 20 of us on earth, and Ping's one, right? Master copywriters have this down to like the smallest little nuance. Because oftentimes, dear, you don't, it's not that you're not selling the thing well enough. A lot of times is you're just not getting rid of the roadblocks. So let me give you a for instance. I sold a company in 2018 for $27 million, right? And I bought a Rolls-Royce. I bought a brand new Rolls-Royce the day the wire cleared the showroom. I was standing in the showroom actually when I got the wire. And I'd wanted a Rolls-Royce for a long time. Before then, I haven't made less than $1 million a year in many, many, many years. So I could have bought one at any time. But I lived in a fairly family-oriented neighborhood where my kids liked the neighborhood. They got used to the kids they grew up with and all that stuff. And I just felt like I was going to look like an asshole if I drove a Rolls-Royce in that neighborhood. So that's sort of that scale, right? Is the Rolls-Royce going to raise my status? Yes. But could it lower my status more than it raises it? Yes. It might be that maybe you want a Rolls-Royce and you've got great credit, so you just go buy one, but then you can't make your house payment. So what's going to happen? It's going to lower your status. The big thing about status and why that might be true, Ping, by the way, is a world-class copywriter. He's a great copywriter. He comes to a lot of my events. I don't go to his because he's in freaking Asia, but he comes to a lot of my, and we got to be pretty good friends. The number one reason people don't buy, you know what? Better than that, let me back up the truck. Here's why people do buy, right? They buy to gain status, number one. 100%. Two, they buy to be in a community, to have a new identity, to have transformation. That's number two. And that's kind of it. And believe it or not, that's caveman baked into us. Men want to make more money and appear more successful so that they can date and mate outside their sphere. I got a face for radio, but I got a beautiful girlfriend. I was married to Miss Asia. I've just had a series of gorgeous women in my life. Unfortunately, those didn't necessarily end well, and I gave them millions and millions of dollars. I'd have a lot more money right now if I had done it. But I always joke, I say, if you're rich, you're always good looking, right? So guys do that. Women like to make money for security reasons. Women are motivated a little differently, right? But the reasons people don't buy are really, there's only three or four. And the primary overarching thought is it's the feeling of disappointment. The feeling of if I buy a thing from you and you've promised me it's going to be awesome and then I get it and it sucks, I feel stupid. So it's a feeling of dis it's the threat of disappointment. Emotionally, that's damaging to me. So if as a consumer, we don't know the difference between real danger and a gorilla coming at us as modern Americans, we still get things that strike fear in us, right? Even having like dark websites are are it's a bad idea if you're trying to sell anything because people are afraid of the dark. There's like all kinds of weird reasons why people don't buy. It's a lot of reasons why. But the main reasons people don't buy is, number one, you don't have what they want. They clicked on your ad or opened your email thinking that you had something that they wanted, and then they got there and it wasn't what they wanted, right? You can't do much about that other than better target the pond that you fish in, right? Number two, they don't believe you. You know, you haven't built trust. So in a lot of sales letters, if you look at Ping's letters, if you go back and examine them, and here's what I would suggest you do if you want to be as good a writer as Ping Jun, go print off every Ping Jun sales letter you can ever find of his, take an ink pen and a legal pad and write them all longhand. And you'll automatically be a better copywriter. I wrote every Gary Halbert letter by hand. And there are literally hundreds and hundreds of them. I wrote them all by hand. That's how I learned to be a copywriter. But you'll find that most good copywriters make one great big claim at the top of a sales letter, right? And then throughout the rest of the sales letter, they're just presenting evidence to back up that claim, and then they make an offer. Amateur copywriters make a claim at the top and more claims in the middle, but they don't provide proof of those claims. They don't provide substantiation. They don't show absolute proof that those claims are true. And if you think about it like a dating exercise, you know, I always joke when a girl goes out on a date with a guy, she's not on a date. That's an interview, right? And she's just waiting for the guy to be stupid enough to open up his mouth and say something she can call bullshit on, right? And we do this with people all the time in regular life, but we don't think about it in sales letters. So down a sales letter, you say, and you're going to get this, 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 and we provide no proof of it. And people just call bullshit on it. If you use like Hotjar, and you know what Hotjar is? It's a piece of software that lets you see movies of how people move on your website. It lets you see where their mouse movement is. And it's pretty crazy. Most people with a long form sales letter, most people with a long form sales letter will read the headline, and then they'll zoom to the bottom of the page and they'll check the price. And so here's how you know what you're doing wrong. This is a test most people don't know. So it's a good little test. If you got people coming to your website, never scrolling and leaving, then you didn't have what they wanted. Right? That's just clear. If you've got people coming to the website, reading the headline, and then zooming to the bottom to see the price, and then they're leaving, then the promise was not a big enough promise to justify the price, right? Or it can be, in some cases, too low of a price. If the promise is huge and you're going to do it for $12, some people just call bullshit on that. But what happens next? If they leave then your price to promise ratio is off. But most of the time what happens is people will come in, they'll read the headline, they zoom to the bottom, see the price, and then they begin reading the sales letter. They'll either go to the top again and read it all the way down, or slightly more common, they read the sales letter backwards. They read it from the bottom up. I don't know if you've ever done that or not. A lot of people do. Here's why they do it. They're not looking for a reason to buy. They're looking for a reason not to buy. They're looking for inconsistencies in what you have to say. If you say at the top of the letter, you know, I lost 20 pounds in 7 days drinking whatever, and then down the way, you know, you make your offer and say, hey, you'll get my 30, 60, and 90-day plan. Hey, wait a minute. That's confusing. I thought I was going to lose the 10 pounds in 7 days. You know what I mean? So you can't have anything that conflicts down in the letter. And one of the biggest rules I've ever taught people, because I learned this at Agora and I've learned in my own stuff, every great sales letter I've ever written in my life had one big idea and one big promise. And then everything else was trying to substantiate and prove that one idea and that one promise. I used to do something called a points of belief audit. How many things are you asking someone to believe in a sales letter? If you're asking them to believe one thing and the whole sales letter builds proof in them believing that one thing, then that sales letter is probably going to do well. If you ask them to believe multiple things or you make multiple promises, you're probably going to fail because they just don't believe you. And then third, and this is the hardest one to overcome, There are only really three reasons people don't buy. Number one, you don't have what they want. Number two, they don't believe you. And number three, and this is the booger, they've already failed at something similar. So when you tell somebody, here's how you can start a drop shipping store and make money. If they've tried a drop shipping store before and lost money, it's practically impossible to sell that to them again. Or if they tried it and they didn't ever even get started and they failed, doesn't matter if it was the person's fault that sold it to them or whatever else. People build bias. You know, I dated a Hispanic girl once, and on the third date out, I stayed at her house one night on the couch like a good boy, and her ex-boyfriend beat all the windows out of my brand new Corvette with a baseball bat. So guess what? I never dated another Hispanic girl ever. Now, what's that have to do with Hispanic girls? Nothing, right? But you develop bias about certain things. I've already failed miserably with a Hispanic girl. I don't want to try that again, right? It's funny how it works, but those are the three big reasons people don't buy. But in order for you to become a real master copywriter, you need to be able to make a crystal clear promise at the top of the letter. You know, what have you got? What's in it for me? What do you want me to do next? Right? So I love this headline formula that is, I've taught a lot of people, it's a really good formula. Finally, comma, desired end result in timeline without objection, 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 or risk reversal. So an example would be, finally, speak passable Spanish in just 7 days without classes, audio tapes, or expensive tutors, or this course is free. So that's a perfect keystone. There's a great book by Mark Joyner, called The Irresistible Offer. And it really talks about just that. If you think about how to understand how strong a concept that is, what do you think the most common delivered food is in the world? What do you figure it is?
I don't know. No idea.
Food delivery. Do you get food delivered to your house ever?
Not so often. Maybe something with rice. I don't know.
Pizza is by far the most delivered food in the world. And it always has been. But Domino's Pizza, there was Pizza Hut. There was all these big companies, right? Domino's Pizza had $700. He traded a Volkswagen van for a pizza oven, and he had $700 in startup capital. But they made an offer. Hot pizza delivered in 30 minutes or less, or it's free. They had no other advantage in the world. They had every disadvantage in the world, right? But he had done his homework, and he knew that people that liked ordering pizza were really disappointed when it showed up cold and late. If you'd notice in that promise, he never even says it's delicious. He never even says it's good pizza. It's hot pizza delivered in 30 minutes or less, or it's free. And that's the crux of a great offer. And when you've started an offer like that, you really truly don't have to be that gifted beyond. If you get that right, and now you can probably show case studies of people eating delicious pizza, and then maybe you got a time tracker on your app like they do now or whatever. There's all sorts of things you can do to add on to that. Like Ping is huge with testimonials. I know he puts tons and tons and tons of testimonials in everything he does. So he's going to make a big promise at the top. He's going to tell an engaging story, probably. Then he's just going to show examples and make you an offer. You don't have to be that great. But the story part is what engages people. When you just start talking at people about why what you have is awesome and it's going to make their life better, and you've not engaged them in the way that a story can, then you're probably never going to get that stupendously high sales letter that you want. Because we can embed all sorts of things in a story. We can embed lessons in a story, you know, and you just follow, you know, decent story structure. It's kind of like story structures. Note that headline's a headline structure, right? Story structure is, I was here doing this when all of a sudden this happened. Therefore, I did this. Here are my challenges. Then I figured it all out. and now I'm better off for it. And wouldn't you like to be better off with me doing it my way? And that's really it, right? But stories motivate people. Stories put people in a state of temporary suspension of belief. So even if you hate, even if I am terribly afraid of Hispanic girls, if I hear a good enough story about Hispanic girls, I might temporarily agree to go out on a date with one, right? Because you usually will not change somebody's core beliefs, but you can temporarily suspend them to give them time and permission to do whatever it is you're asking them to do. And those are really the big ones. You know, the headline's huge, the story's huge, social proof is huge, and then just make a clear offer. Make a clear, easy to understand offer without too many options. One option is always the very best. Make them, you know, give them an offer with one option. And the other thing I see people screw up with their sales letters, the last thing, and I'll hush, is especially when people are pricing digital products, they just pull pricing straight out of their ass. They don't have any strategy to it at all. They don't know what to price. You're smiling because I promise you, you've done it, right? You just pull a price straight out of your ass. And you say, well, that sounds like it ought to be about this much. And you don't ever test it, you know, and you don't know, you may have had an incredible winning offer that you just charge too little or too much for. Like if I tell you that I'm going to take 20 years off you and make you look just like you looked when you were 16 years old again, and you're going to have the perfect skin with no pores, and I'm going to do all that for you for $3. Well, you're not going to believe me. You know, I got Neil Patel's a good buddy of mine. And I was hanging with Neil, and we were talking about how much money he charges people, which is a bloody fortune. I mean, just a bloody fortune. And I said, how much are you charging nowadays? And he said, well, we don't really want to take any engagements that are under $250,000 a year. And I'm like, holy hell. So you get 25 grand a month. He said, yeah, on the low side. I said, what are you doing for people for $25,000 a month? And he says, I'm doing the same thing that you're doing for $2,500 a month, but my people have bigger problems. He said, if I walked into corporate America and told them I'm going to fix a $10 million problem for them for $2,500, they laughed me out of the room. So you can price too low, right? But you can also price too high. You know, you'll know really quick if you put a hot jar on your thing, you'll know pretty quick. Because if people are reading your headline and going, ooh, I want that, and they go to the bottom and they see the price and go, wow, that's too much, and leave, then you know you've kind of crossed the boundary. You know, you want about 70% of the people. You're going to run off some, but you want about 70% of the people to stay around and read the rest of the sales message. And then just don't put, it's just like the date, right? If you're on the date with a guy and he shows up looking pretty good, smelling pretty good, and it's somewhat charming, you know, the worst thing he can do is just talk too much. Because every time he's opening his mouth, he's giving you, you know, you're smiling because you know exactly what I'm talking about. You're just waiting for them to screw up, right? And your customer is doing exactly the same with you. If the guy had just shown up, you have a nice meal and a good time, and he's not rude, and you know, he seems respectful or whatever, he's probably gonna get a second date, right? Because he passed that bar. And then as your relationship with him gets deeper and deeper, there can be bigger and bigger commitment. And that's exactly the way marketing works. It's no different than dating relationships, honest to God. It's the same. It's romance.
Thank you. So tell me why, for example, there are marketers who are making, let's say, $100 million. You know, like in total revenue, but I'm looking at their sales letter and I'm not like, you know, getting turned on. I'm not going to pull my, you know, my card out and thinking, oh my God, I have to register right now. And why do I feel like so anxiously attracted to Peng Jun's, you know, sales letter or other sales letters that I've seen? And it's not just the writing, it's the font, it's like, you know, the different stuff.
Oh, the design makes a huge difference, especially in today's market. We don't, so I did a talk not long ago, the five reasons the caveman leaves your offers. And I'll answer that question. Remind me if I missed the question about the $100 million seller. You're probably talking about Alex or somebody like that. I know Alex real well. I was the first person to ever put Alex on a stage. He sucked, by the way. He's gotten a little better, you know. But yeah, a pink stuff just probably resonates with you. You know, why are you dating the guy you're dating, right? He probably resonated with you, right? There's we get around people that we vibe with, you know, for whatever reason. A lot of times, like a lot of my offers, I don't try to make them terribly compelling because I don't want anybody to buy them that's not committed to actually taking some action and doing something. So I don't want to make the, I could write them much more compelling offers. but if it's something where I'm worried about somebody actually getting an ROI on it, I don't want to trick them into it. You know what I mean? So I think some marketers will just have a more subdued message. And they've got brand and reputation and whatever, but design's a huge deal. So when you know, why do people, you know, somebody hits your website, right? So a person hits a website. You've done this, right? You've hit a website before. You have, are you ready for this? In 3/10 of a second, you're going to decide if you're going to buy something from that site. In 7 seconds, you made a firm decision. 7 seconds, okay? But you can make a decision not to buy in 3/10 of a second. And I promise you, Lily, you've done it within the last 30 days. You've hit some website somewhere searching for something, and you went, ooh, that's incredibly ugly or old or out of fashion or doesn't vibe with me at all. And you're just out. Well, a lot of times that's just design. That's just purely design. Design is super important because in 3/10 of a second, you can't read the word the, right? And you can lose half of your audience in 3/10 of a second. If you look at your bounce rates on your websites, you can lose half your audience in 3/10 of a second. It's not your copy's fault because they never had time to read any of your copy at all. When they read the copy, the headline, 7 seconds later, they've decided if they're going to buy or not right then. Now they go into, there's a book, there's a great book called Thinking Fast and Slow. If you get a chance to read, it's a beautiful award-winning book. But it talks about how we make our decisions in 7 seconds on average. But then while we think we're making the decision, we're actually talking ourselves out of the decision we've already made, right? So we start second guessing our decisions. Our guts are generally right. You know, when we say, I'm going to, you hear people say, well, I'm going to go with my gut on this. You're usually right, right? But in 7 seconds, you've made a decision. Now you start talking yourself out of it. So if a person hits your website and the design is good, right? That's A. The design needs to be good. It doesn't need to be dark. It needs to be light background. If you look at Apple's website or Google's website, any of the major companies, they're all light background. They're all this dark background shit that's going around with SaaS companies and software companies. It looks slick, but it doesn't convert worth a crap. It doesn't convert well at all because the caveman's afraid of the dark and the caveman is afraid of disorder. If you've got a bunch of different fonts and a bunch of tables out of alignment, that tells the caveman, this is not an organized cave. I don't want to be around this tribe. They're no better off than I am. And you just bug out subconsciously without ever knowing, right? Then if you do read the copy, right? Now you go, okay, unk, unk, I want that. Now you're going to go look and see how what's it going to cost me, right? And you start calculating in your brain if the thing you desire is worth the price to pay for it. So it's a different animal. So pricing really matters. And then you get into, you know, now you get into technical. It's really easy to create, you can create, it's really easy to screw this up, I should say. You can create an I can create you an award-winning website to sell anything you want to sell and write you copy that would scorch the earth. But if your technology is flawed, you're super screwed. And you got to think about that caveman. So the caveman comes in and goes, huh, this looks okay, this looks right. This cave looks good, right? I'm gonna read this promise. It's clear. I understand what it is, I understand what this tribe does. I'd like to be part of that tribe. And it goes down, he goes down to the bottom of the page and he goes, okay, I can afford the tuition for this tribe, very much like a country club, right? I can afford it. So now he goes back and reads the rest of it. And now he's going to make a buying decision, or she's going to make a buying decision. She's going to say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and buy. So they go down the bottom of the page and they hit the button, the buy button, and there's a big delay and it spins. Or, the order form comes up and the description or the price on the order form are slightly different than they were on the page, or you take them out of the page look and feel that they were in and take them into a different, completely different look and feel to check out. Well, it makes them very, very uncomfortable, right? It makes them very, very, very uncomfortable. So they'll just, you know, most people, by the way, if you have an order form where they put in data and they misspell an email or they forget a field or whatever, and it pops up and says, oh, you forgot this field. Something like 90% of people just bail out of that transaction. They just bail out. They won't enter their stuff two or three times to try to fix it or fix the mistake. It's a technical error. Now they're out, right? And then this is not why they don't buy, but it's why they don't stay. Once they have bought and you've let them into your tribe, right? And now they had a little problem somewhere, they didn't get something, and they can't reach anybody. They can't get a hold of customer service. They're not getting prompt responses. Now they feel abandoned by their brand new tribe. You got to think about people as we're all in tribes. We have a family that's a tribe. We have a football team we like that's a tribe. We have a school that we go to that went to that was a tribe. If we ride Harley motorcycles, we're in a motorcycle tribe. If we go to marketing conventions and we feel like we're in the marketing industry, that we're in that tribe. So we're all in these tribes. And we're always trying to upgrade our status to get in a better and better and better tribe. If you move into a neighborhood, when you bought your first house, if you moved into a neighborhood, by the time you've been there 6 months, you were ready to move to a better neighborhood. We all want to elevate our tribes. We all want to elevate the people we hang out with. And that's because back in the day, right, we all want strong leaders too. It's right. Donald Trump's president. He appears to be strong. No matter how you believe about him politically, he appears to most people to be strong. We want strong leaders because back in the day of cavemen, if we weren't in a tribe with a strong leader, we died. We literally died. And our brains don't know the difference right now. We just really have not developed nearly as much as we think we have. We're still very much cavemen. We've only been talking to each other for 12,000 years, but we've been on the earth for 500,000 years. You got to let that sink in. We've been on the earth 500,000 years, but we've only had been able to communicate in any way at all for the last 12,000. Up until just a few thousand years ago, not even a few thousand years ago, I guess 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, men were living in caves with only 5 or 6 of us, and we were the weakest species on the planet. You think about it. We don't have fur. We don't have claws. We don't have fangs. When one of us is born, it takes us a year to stand upright. I mean, we are a very fragile species. The fact that we developed it at all is a miracle, and we only developed because we developed these big, fat brains, and we were able to build tools and do things that other animals couldn't do. Otherwise, back in the day, before we started communicating, we would hide in caves and other animals would kill other animals in the hunt. And we would run out of the cave late at night and eat the meat off the bones of what the other animals left. That's how humans survived. But if you've ever read the book Sapiens, it's a fascinating book on the evolution of mankind. It's a great book, but it'll tell you the stories of how we evolved, how money came to be, how mating became so important, all those things. So copywriting, I know you probably weren't looking for an answer like that, but how do you make a great offer is you learn how to get inside somebody's brain and tickle it a little bit, because we have these three brains in our head, three different, most people don't know you got three brains in your skull. There are three different brains in there and they all do different things. But when you learn how to manipulate those brains for good, not for evil, I use the word manipulate. People don't like that word, but you know, we all manipulate in one way or another. Kids manipulate parents, parents manipulate kids, people manipulate employees, manipulate bosses, bosses manipulate employees. You know, as long as it's for their own good, there's nothing unethical about it. But yeah, you got to learn how to do that to make truly, genuinely great offers.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you.
They can go to, I do a thing in the morning called AI Morning Club. It's really cool. If you go to AIMorningClub.com, we do 30 minutes every morning. And anybody that wants to come to it can come to it for free. We talk about AI and marketing and copywriting and stuff for 30 minutes to kick off your day every morning. I do it every Monday morning, but we're on every morning, 5 days a week, where we have people that come in to talk about operations, traffic, things like that. It's all 100% free. There's nothing ever sold on there. We never make a pitch for anything. It's just a way to build community. We have several hundred people on those every morning. It's a lot of fun. That's probably where most people get to know me. And then I've got an event coming up. This probably won't air before then, but I've got an event coming up September 22nd called Growth Hacking Live. It's growthhacking.com in San Diego. Doing a lot of AI right now, just doing a lot of AI, software development, and all sorts of stuff with AI.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.